Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Or in this case, when Juliana finishes the book, we do the podcast. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
All right. So why are we reading this again? Do you know?
Because I just finished it.
Oh, yes. That's why we're reviewing it. But the reason we're reading... a book in the Revelation Space universe.
Yeah.
Is that we were reading this Prefect Dreyfus emergency series.
Yes.
Which is called The Prefect and then True. Elysium Fire and other books. In fact, I have it right here. Let's quickly look at the episode list. That was called there's The Prefect, Elysium Fire and Machine Vendetta. Yeah, that was it. It was Machine Vendetta. And we were like, hey, this is okay. It's good. Alistair Reynolds is good at writing.
He is.
We like the characters, but we were kind of disappointed by how... it didn't really, like, it wasn't satisfying for the quality of the first two books in that series.
Yes, it was missing something. And I wanted to know more about the melding plague because it only ever had been touched. It was already, either it already happened or...
Or it was in the future. Because we said the prefect, well, is either going to end with, you know, the melding plague hitting or whatever. And it didn't. Again,
no.
It's not a spoiler to say that it's a prequel and it doesn't catch all the way up with all the events. And I said, well, no. And this is what I said. Actually, it can't do that. Like, it can't end at that point because... that is already covered, like the experience of arriving there or the melding plague coming is already kind of covered in Chasm City. And I said, we should just read that because you've not read it. And I said we'll get to that in the future.
So now I finished it.
Yeah.
And I have thoughts.
Right. Well, let's just say, let's cover this off a little bit. I've read this book before. In fact, this is my third time reading this book.
Okay.
The first time was before the SFBRP.
Yeah.
The second time was back in 2012 during the SFBRP.
Is there an episode?
There's an episode here. It says Chasm City, Revelation Space 0.3, which was the numbering there on Goodreads. But actually now on Goodreads, the numbering is Revelation Space 0.5. So this is kind of classed as a prequel, even though I don't really consider it a prequel. But it is kind of a prequel.
It is.
But it's like an off to the side. All of like the godlike people or the big people or the big story stuff is happening over there in Revelation Space and Redemption Arc and Absolution Gap. You know, that's a kind of like the main storyline.
Yes.
And this is all like over here to the side. Here's what it's like down on the ground rather than space adventures.
Even though there are also space adventures,
but like it's a different style of space adventure.
Yes.
So this is set over three time periods and in three locations.
Yeah. But one second.
Oh yeah.
So are we go? Can I just say stuff? Are we?
Oh yeah, yeah. But I just wanted to say like where this fits in. We're not going to do any spoilers quite yet.
Okay,
that's what I want to say. We'll definitely get to a spoiler section. But again, this is the third time reading a book, and we want to have a kind of more in-depth discussion about some of the events in the book.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would say there's kind of twists, but not really. It's not so much twists, but there's just the world is so complicated and the characters are so complicated that stuff's revealed over time. Actually, there are a few really good reveals and a few twists, which we're not going to get into right like at the start of this. But I just wanted to say that the reason why we hadn't read this before is because it isn't in that main sequence.
Yes.
It's not part of the Revelation Space trilogy.
No.
And we read The Prefect, and The Prefect, when that came out, was sort of like, oh, this is like a prequel book. And then it's actually a prequel trilogy. And like I say, this kind of fits in between. And even though, like I say, it's set over different time spans, it's set right on like a turning point of the Revelation Space universe. It's sort of like when it turns from a place which is actually quite nice to live in and everything's going well and everything's cool until you're like, ah, shit, now we're in a place where there's wolves around. Like, we've got to look out for the wolves. In other words, the aliens which are trying to wipe out or the force which is trying to wipe out all intelligent spacefaring life and things
like
that.
Which is much later than that book.
No, it is this book.
Oh.
That's also mentioned in this book. Like I say, this is introducing all of that for the first time.
Yes,
this
a little bit, but it's not like part of, like really part of
it. It is very much part of this book. Don't worry about it. We'll talk about that. Maybe we won't get to the spoiler section. Don't frown at me like that. You can't just tell me that's not part of the book. It's introduced in this book. So that's why it fit in. So you tell me what you want to talk about a bit about some of this book then.
Okay. First of all, this is very body horror, grimy, weird stuff.
Yes.
Oh my God. I didn't expect that.
Why didn't you expect it? You've read Alistair Reynolds' books before.
I know, but it is heavy on it. Like, it's... Anyway, it's still good to read.
Just a note, I don't think it was that heavy compared to some of his other books.
I don't know. Maybe it's just about the time of when I'm reading this, but it is intense. Also, we are spending time with multiple people and... none of them are really like likable.
No.
And they're layers. They're layers and layers of layers. Yeah. And it is so
Are we cutting straight to the chase here?
I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying they're layers and I'm saying it is complex. But also there are many things in this book that I just really like the way of looking at certain philosophical points because there's like stuff, philosophical stuff happening, like like it is not being examined as in let's sit down and have a philosophical conversation. However, it is you know, philosophical in a very hands-on way.
It's philosophy via action.
Yes.
And when you're doing big space opera with, you know, all kinds of weird stuff going on, gribbly body horror, you know, all of the stuff that you can do with fun dystopian science fiction.
Yes.
And post, it's not really so much post-apocalyptic, but there has been an apocalypse, but it's not like everyone's living in caves post-apocalypse. It's sort of like the world has changed a lot and we're all having to rejigger things and reconfigure things, our expectations of what's happening here in the city.
And also, I just went through the book and looked at things I highlighted.
Yeah.
And one of them I remember now was, you know, whenever something comes up and it, like, music is mentioned, but on a level that is not just very shallow, but you only understand the reference and the idea and the thought process behind a certain mention of music if you are a musician, like when he wrote
like Diamond Dogs Turquoise Days,
which I haven't read, so I don't know.
But I'm just saying the names that I just said is named after, I think, a David Bowie song and a whatever, who else the other one is, like that
could be. I don't know that because
that's what I'm saying.
I'm talking about more of like a classical musician.
But I'm using the same thing, is that I just mentioned two musical references that you don't get.
Yeah.
And you're reading musical references that you don't think other people are going to get.
Yes, or not in the same way. Because even when he wrote this paragraph, I already knew what composer he would be mentioning by just describing of what was happening and how it was described. So that's always nice. And he's done that in... didn't he also write... No, who wrote... No, Hydrogen Sonata was...
No, that's Ian M. Banks. Yeah.
But that's like a similar kind of thing. Like if you are in a certain background and you have certain knowledge, you will read things in a different way. And I just appreciated that in this particular section there. And I've highlighted certain sections where it became either philosophical in a way or
musical
in a way. And... I did enjoy also the bits coming together as usually happens.
Yeah.
You have a big thing, a big untangled thing, and then you follow the individual strands, and at certain points...
And you see
points,
all the connections
starts,
at the end.
Yeah, it's, at a certain point, it starts clicking and you think, oh, right, this is why that is mentioned, and this is where that is mentioned. And then it all, in the end, it starts to make sense, and it feels... so satisfying
when it
comes together.
And that's, I think, what we were missing from that third book in the Prefect series. Sort of like, oh, in the first books of these, we're like, oh, that was mentioned, this one mentioned, this one. And of course, the whole conspiracy is linked and there's one person, not one person, or like there's like one explanation which makes sense of multiple different strands of the story.
Yeah.
And that's in this book, and it's in Revelation Space, and it's in Absolution Gap, and it's in those other books, but we're kind of missing from whatever that last book in the Prefect series was called.
Velocity. Vendetta. Machine Vendetta.
Yes, Machine Vendetta was kind of missing some of that there.
Yeah, and it's always done really cleverly. And it's like what I think also is happening. Like, you're sure there are lots of conversations that we are...
There's a lot of conversations.
A lot of conversations and some people thinking about stuff. However, it still feels like it's done, like, because people are... talking or thinking about actions, it never feels like it's just a pure conversation of, you know, yep, two people sitting in a room saying stuff, because it's always,
they're often going somewhere or trying to do something together. They're like, hey, let's go over here, and on the way they have that conversation, and when they get there, what they do is kind of like, because they had that conversation, either they do something different or you reflect on what happens differently. Yes.
And also while something happens, we get like in like little in between bits,
yeah,
where a person is thinking about something, but then he's thinking about action,
yeah,
you know, things happening, being done. And so I think that's done in a very engaging way.
Yeah.
For me, at least.
What I really like about this book is, like you say, that combination of, for me, body horror and all of the horror elements, the gribbly stuff, mm-hmm, which you really affected by, and I think, mm-hmm, is kind of not even the most extreme version of it. But no, I really appreciate that. But also the psychological horror.
Yeah.
So there's body horror, like, you know, like human body horror and just like the situation that you're in. But also that psychological horror of spending time with people who might be psychopaths, and at the end is very clear that, oh no, actually, yes, these are what is it,
broken
saying?
People,
what's that,
broken people,
also the most dangerous person on the spaceship, you know, like I keep talking back to whatever one of those the books are that we read, the Planetfall books, where you're like, oh right, it's revealed actually that you know,
are the most dangerous person.
Yeah,
actually,
you're who's the most dangerous person is sort of like, oh, it's the psycho, you know, and it's the human person, and it's the person who might not even realize that they're the most dangerous, but here's someone who's the most dangerous person on the spaceship, which is actually the most dangerous person. Mm. So what I would say is that there's three time spans now, three locations.
Yeah.
Tana Mirabel is a soldier from Sky's Edge, which is a planet which has been colonized, you know, hundreds of years before, and has been almost at constant war since then. Mm-hmm. And he's on a mission to get revenge on somebody who's gone over to Chasm City.
Yeah.
And, you know, over to Yellowstone. Yeah. And Chasm City, which is like one of the like main capital cities of the galaxy, of the human explored part of the galaxy. Mm-hmm. So it's a big place to go. And he turns up. So there's a little bit on Sky's Edge. Then he flies there and he comes out and he goes into this place because he's having amnesia, memory loss. And so he goes to a hospice Idlewild.
Yeah, because he survives a big attack and he becomes the hero and stuff.
Yeah.
So and then that's kind of like, that's how it starts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Starts.
That's, yeah,
you
know, so it's,
he,
yeah,
he becomes, some, comes out of, like,
a fun space elevator scene at the start.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he comes out of there, and so he's kind of trying to regain his memories of what he's doing and who, like, what's going on. And I really enjoy that, you know, like the memory reset kind of thing of like, oh, who am I? What am I going to do? There's been a break in the memory, which is good. But also he's been infected by a religion virus. Mm-hmm. And this was brought up in the Prefect of series and also very much in the third book in the Revelation space, which is Absolution Gap, where there they have like a religion which is about looking at something in the sky and waiting for a planet to disappear for a second and reappear. And also they have blood works there, so if your faith starts flagging a bit, you can go and you can get re-injected or re-administered some blood from someone who's got a more virulent strain of the religion virus, which then interrupts your brain stuff. So that's another kind of horror kind of thing as well. And in this, he's getting flashbacks to like the weird founder of the religion and the founder of the Sky's Edge, which is Sky Houseman.
Yeah.
So we also have, so we've got like the main Tana Mirabel, we've got flashbacks to his life back on Sky's Edge before he leaves, and when they're doing these snake hunts and battles and
he
other
was
stuff.
He's working for this crime boss.
Yeah,
kind
crime
of
lord.
Person.
And then we also get these blood work infused religious virus stuff of the memories of Sky Houseman on a colony ship which is coming from Earth over to Sky's Edge.
Yeah.
And there's like four different spaceships going over, these colony ships that are going over. They've got lots of sleepers on board.
Yeah.
And there's crew. So he was part of a crew or part of the family crew that goes over. And you know, I've mentioned this a few times before, mild spoilers now, where I said, oh, and one of the ships blows up, and then you're like, but what how many ships, if that ship blew up, what about another ship? Was there another ship? Like that whole kind of thing, how many ships set off and how many ships arrive? And that can be a secret. Yep. And that comes up in surprisingly high number of these books where there's a fleet of spaceships going across. Yes. Between different places. Yes.
So it at that point, it's like we have this very much like with Aurora. It's the observation of what happens if you send human settlers, like you send out human people from Earth on these kind of colonizing ships, and after a certain point there will come the people living there. They have to be living so long, and then they have multiple generations of these people that they're losing the contact.
They're disconnected.
And also then you can start keeping secrets, because if you keep a secret from a generation, they won't know that happened. And so it's all about the influences and the manipulation.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Wool series, the Silo. It's on TV, on the Apple TV as well. It's that same kind of thing where when you're in this capsule world, all you need is to make something secret or have everyone in one generation not tell the next generation, and then it's a secret forever. Yeah. I don't want to get into too many situations or examples, because you're into spoiler territory for other books at that point, for many other books. I do want to say, though, this is a really interesting playground, because for Alistair Reynolds to work in, he's addressed these things before in other books, the Pushing Ice, some of his Earth Children books as well. But it's unique in the Revelation Space World with Alistair Reynolds, because everywhere else you get the light hugger ships, which can go almost the speed of light, and so only take 20 years to get between different planets, rather than, you know, 300 years or whatever, you know, 300, 200 years. And this is meant to be, hey, this is a fleet that went off as a colonizing ship, and this is the only colonizing ship that got from one place to another place with survivors on board who could then actually settle a planet. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, they brought all of the problems from Earth. They just brought them along with them and played. And then there's another fun thing. Oh, yeah. So this is the only time it happens in Revelation Space. So this is like the only story that can happen on those colony ships.
Yeah. And it also connects back to Earth.
Yeah. And also, they also have these other things where you send over a robot ship, and the robot ship has it has the DNA sequences of human DNA, and then robots raise the first generation of humans on another planet, and it's kind of hinted that doesn't go well either. That's like a really bad scene for the people, like a whole society of, what do they call them, these feral children brought up by robots who have completely disconnected. They have no memories and not even any human parents from back on Earth as well. Yeah. So yes, I did make a note. Yeah. I wrote a musical, a comedy electronic musical about a colony ship that's going from one to the other. It's called the Terra Nova, and ends up having dinosaurs on board, velociraptors infesting a colony ship going from Earth to a different planet.
Yep. Intelligent dinosaurs. And
yeah. So. At one point I'm like, all right, so I need a way for these speaking dinosaurs to be taught like human language, or like to be able to speak. And how will that work? And the plot mechanics that I did was having some robot clowns who were like the teachers, and the error checking software or the error checking thing was turned off for all internal monitoring of the space station, on the inside of this, to make sure that these teachers don't notice that anything's wrong, that their students are small dinosaurs rather than small children.
Right.
And so the one of the key parts of that is that these two robots, I think everything is awesome, which is, I wrote a song, which is everything is good. And and it's two robot clowns as teachers on a colony ship. And then I reread this and I was like, oh, this is where I got it from. Clown is, it's the same thing. Clown is like this VR kind of like cube, like volume room where they have from the child's point of view, who's in this room, he always sees a clown playing with him, but it's not, it's just on video screens all the way around. But sort of like a little, you know, like a, what do you call it? Like a volume? Is that what they call it now? Like a video volume?
Yeah. That, but it's also just a projection.
It's not a projection. Yeah, it's like a projection mapped image. Mm. So always from the...
It looks 3D.
Yeah, it looks 3D.
But it isn't.
Yeah, but then once it stops working, you move, you realize, oh, it was always looking at me, but yeah. I was just in the middle of the room as a child. So.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, so that's where... So that's where these clown teacher characters on an interstellar spaceship colony ship must have come from. Because there's no way I'd have just come up with, like, I need a teacher character. Oh, I'll make it a clown. Where did that come from? It came from my back
Your
of my brain.
After reading Chasm City.
Right then. Yeah. I think we've explained a bit. Let's give this a rating.
Okay.
And let's get into spoiler territory. Because there is no way for me to continue on with this.
Yeah.
Without talking about, without getting into... some of the things I really want to get into.
Okay.
Because it's, yes, this is a book that I don't want to just give away what happens. So let's tell people to read the book or not. What's your rating of this book? Did you enjoy this book and how do you enjoy it? And what rating would you give it?
I think this is a very, very strong, good book. It has a lot in it.
Yes.
There's a bit.
It's his second book. Second published novel.
It said on the cover, like it said like the blurb on the bottom. It says that like for being the first novel, it's I don't know, it's awesome.
I don't think it was Alice Rowland's first. I think Revelation Space was his first novel, and then this was maybe his second. It's all done in I'd need to look at it in publication order.
It says on the front of the book, an impressive first novel and quite possibly the space opera of 2000.
Because it says here Chasm City was 2001 and Revelation Space was from 2000. So either one of these other books, he was his first novel.
Yeah.
And I do consider them a very good pair.
Yes.
I would say...
Let me finish.
Carry on. Yes, it's very good.
So I think it's a very good book. I think in the middle... it gets a bit too introspect, or like there's too much thinking going on.
Right.
And
certainly picks up at the end, though.
It certainly does. It takes a bit longer. It took a bit longer for me than you said it would, but it's totally worth it. And the end was like the epilogue end. Like
don't need to get into that. I want a rating of this.
Okay, okay.
If that spoiled it for you, knock the rating down. But I'm not going to talk about the very end right now.
Oh, no, I wasn't talking about the. I just would have said an impression. Yeah. But anyway, I would give it 4 stars.
Okay,
four and a half, maybe.
You're giving it 4.5.
4.5.
I would give this book 4.5 stars. However, many, many. Asterisks and caveats.
Yeah, that's why I said between 4 and 4.5.
You need to be very good with, or very happy to read a book with a lot of difficult body horror and psychological horror.
Yeah.
You have to understand that the people that you're spending time with aren't the nicest people. That everyone isn't. There is no hero in this story.
Yeah.
It's anti-heroes and psychopaths all the way down.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, that's what you're getting into. But if you're happy to read a book with lots of gribbly stuff and dangerous situations and dystopian situations and post-apocalyptic situations, but also that's kind of like the topic of it, but I actually think it's quite a fun read and a light read, and except for that bit, like you say, where it bogs down a bit in the middle, quite a brisk read and breezy read. There's always stuff going on, there's stuff to think about, and this is literally the third time I've read this book.
Yeah.
First time I've listened to it as an audiobook. John Lee does the audiobook recording,
of course,
which is great. I had to finish this book in 2 weeks. I had like, because it was on the Audible free library, but it was leaving my bookshelf at the end of May, I think it was,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, that was it, yeah.
So I had to get through it pretty quick, and that was no problem at all. Like, it just went straight through. I think it's one of the best Revelation Space books, even though it sets us, like, is over there by the side. But I consider this to be, like, one of the better Alistair Reynolds books, mm-hmm. which we might bring this up again, or one of these other books up again, in our episode 4, what are we up to? 5? What episode are we
550
on?
550 is going to be the special one.
Yeah, 550, a special episode.
Yeah.
And someone asked, what about like the books which stand the test of time or don't stand the test of time, or what would you consider in the pantheon or the canon? And I would say at least one of these early Alistair Reynolds books will be in the SFBRP Masterworks series that we're going to talk about on episode 5. 150.
Yes.
Where we will come up with a list of 30 books which we've reviewed on the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, which we think are good, stand the test of time, or don't need to because they're recent enough, you know, mm-hmm. like in the last mm-hmm. few years. And if they go back decades, they're not just good for the time, they're actually good to read now. And I would say this book would be a contender for the SFBRP Masterworks series, which we will discuss
yes.
in a few upcoming months' time.
For me it is between 4 and 4.5 stars.
Well, let's give it 4.5 stars because I'm going to give it 4.5 stars.
Okay.
What we're going to do now is we're going to set off the spoiler warning.
Yeah.
We're going to sound the spoiler horn.
Yes.
And we're going to talk Please. For maybe another 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Based on the idea, based on the fact that we've read this book and we're just going to talk about stuff, which is, I'm not going to go into all of the details, mm-hmm. but just talking about some of the main themes and main ideas here gives away something which you should be working. It's the fun way to work out what's going on
yeah.
in the book.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of my enjoyment the previous times I read this. The first time was working out along the way.
Yeah.
The second time was picking out all the clues that were there that I missed the first time. And now the third time is just like appreciating a job well done.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Picking out the themes and stuff as well. So spoiler on, and then we'll say what that idea is. Hmm. Go.
Oh, what? Am I doing the spoiler?
Yeah, we'll do the spoiler on together. 3, 2, 1. All right, spoiler
Is that long
done.
Enough?
So here's the thing. Here's my little statement mm-hmm. about this, opening statement of this
Go
kind
for
of
it.
Thing. This is a very good post-Fight Night story. So Fight Club. Sorry, let me say the word Fight Club again. So Fight Club. The twist in Fight Club, for anyone who's not listening here, I'm going to spoil it. It's two people in one person's head.
Yeah.
Amnesia. And so there's this break and somebody doesn't know that they're actually two different identities in one person's head.
Yeah.
And in that book, it's sort of like they switch between the two. Mm. One of the identities knows he's got a dual identity and the other one doesn't. Jack or whatever it is, whoever the main character is.
I've seen this once. And it's been a while. I don't know Fight Club
Fight Club is there. You've got Brad Pitt and Thingy. The other actor.
Why didn't you repair this?
Let me just look at the movie. Who's this guy here?
Can't see it.
Brad Pitt, Edward Norton. So you got Edward Norton, Brad Pitt there as well, like this. So Fight Club, the novel came out in 1996. The movie comes out in 1999. Right. This book came out in 2001. So here's my thing. This is at a time when the idea that one person can have multiple identities inside them and they don't know they have multiple identities, and one of the main twists or reveals in the book is that they have the same identity.
Yeah.
These days, it's difficult for that to be the main twist because we don't just read media that's come out at the same time. We now live in a post-Fight Night world.
Fight Club.
Fight Club world. There's a reason I keep saying Fight Night, but I'm not going to go into it now. So we live in a post-Fight Club world where if weird stuff starts happening and people are like, oh, I don't know what I am and I'm having these like breaks or psychotic breaks or, you know, these breaks in my memory, mm-hmm. we think, who's the other character that this person could also be?
Yeah.
And this is all happening in their mind.
Yeah.
So this book takes it knows that that could be a thing. And like,
that on steroids.
Yeah, it's that on steroids. It's sort of like, how about instead of having one person have two people in their brain, how about it be three people in our brain and that there's three characters, but they're all linked, actually, that they're not the same person, but there's this same line of consciousness which is going from one to the next to the next.
Yes.
And
also because it introduces all kinds of body horror, that kind of makes it be in line with that, because they literally explain that you can change anything.
Yes.
About a body. Might it be how long you live? Might it be how you look, what you experience, the abilities you have?
Yeah.
Every single thing. So nothing you read, you can be sure of.
Right, yes. But, and that's why I think this book works really well, is that nothing you read you can be sure of, but our main character is very sure. And anytime he's like, hey, wait a second, why was that memory? Why was I looking at that memory in the third person? And he's sort of like, nope, I can't think about that, because he's got like these blocks in him.
Yeah.
And there's this all this great misdirection where he's got that blood virus, he's got the religion virus. He's sort of like, well, that explains it then. Of course I've got this virus, and that'll be it, you know. Yeah. And as it keeps coming backwards and forwards into it, it's sort of like, ah, three stories put together, and it turns out they're all the same person. And again, I could mention other books which this has been done more recently, and maybe I'll mention it to you later.
Yeah.
But I also don't even want to ask you if you've read the book that's in my brain now, because if I ask you the book, it kind of gives away what one of the main twists or the main reveals are in that book here.
Yeah.
So yes, now we live in a world where this is no longer an opportunity to do, like, this book comes in at the time where it's kind of like, it's very dated in a way, where you're like, oh, this reminds me a bit of Fight Club, when you go, when was Fight Club written? Oh, novel 1996, a movie 1999, and this book comes out in 2001, you're like, ah, okay, it makes sense. In the same way that, like, around about the same time, The Matrix comes out. So now you can't really have a movie which is like, oh, this is all happening in virtual reality, and you're actually in there. Like, at the time, that could be done, you know?
Yeah.
At the time, you could have this thing where, like, and the same with the fighting. You're like, oh, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. You get all that wire work, and you're like, oh, this is now the thing. And now you're like, you've got to tone down. You can't just do wire work like that. There has to be, like, a science fictional or fantasy reason for it to exist.
Yes, yes.
Chasm City book,
it is written so well that you kind of start understanding this character, who also starts not trusting or liking himself in the same time, in the same speed that you start realizing, oh, what we are having here is a unreliable narrator. And then he at the same time figures out, oh, I'm an unreliable narrator.
Yes.
And what's going on? And then he starts even questioning his own motives of why he feels like he has this certain urge in him, like that he's got this, like, I need to go and kill this person. I don't know quite understand why. And I guess it's some sort of honor thing. And I'm not actually sure why I should do it, because in the end, he didn't really do anything major. But
yeah, like,
I still,
if I was in his place, I would have just done the same. He's just like a guy doing his job.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's lots
like, we killed his family, he wants to come and kill our family. Yeah.
There's a lot of understanding of what's like the motives of people, why they want to do it, and what, but it's still like lots of questioning.
Yeah, what I really enjoy about this book, and I realize again in some of my own fiction, I did the same kind of thing, which is you need an incident which makes someone wake up and go, oh, I don't remember, like the amnesia incident. And in this book, it's sort of like, oh, you come out of cold sleep, you know, one out of every 100 people come out and they have some amnesia, but give it a few weeks or give it a few days and you'll get your memories back. And you're like, great, we can just do the wake up from cold sleep amnesia kind of thing.
Yes.
Which is done very, very clunkily. You know, in, Project Hail Mary, where our, you know, knockoff Mark Watney comes out and he's sort of like, oh, I've had, you know, cold sleep amnesia, and now the and that comes back to him over the course of however long it's handy for it to come back. It's like Thingy, who wrote that book, can't remember now, he read this book and was sort of like, oh, right, okay, cold sleep amnesia, that's the way to do it. But again, then forgot to do anything interesting with it, whereas this book is only about the cold sleep amnesia.
Constantly.
So I wrote a novel called Get That Rat Off My Face, which begins with a thought experiment, with the idea being that if you don't know who you are and you've got to design a society, you should design a society to take care of as many people as possible, because you don't know where you're going to end up in that society.
Yeah.
John Rawls, I think, was the philosopher or the thinker who came up with that. Yeah. And I start the book off with that.
Yeah.
So the whole point is that, like, okay, you're in this thought experiment and we've damped your internal your internal measurement of who you are, so you don't know who you are. Let's do this thought experiment. And then that plays out throughout the book as they do different thought experiments in this different way. And I'm like, oh, yeah, of course you need that. If you want somebody not to remember their past, there has to be an in-story reason for them not to remember their past.
Yeah.
So we're now living in this post-Fight Club post-revelation space world,
yeah,
where if someone is going to have multiple personalities in their head, that can't be the twist, or yeah, that can't be the reveal. It's now just assumed that that can, that is just now a part of science fiction.
Yeah.
Multiple people in the same head, which isn't a result of Fight Club. Oh, this person's just, as you know, having a psychotic break, or their multiple personality syndrome, or whatever, mm-hmm, it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's actually, there's like a technological reason for it. There's a science fictional reason for it.
It's been done on purpose.
Or a fantasy, yeah, a fantasy reason for it. Someone, yeah, has done it to themselves, or someone has... is doing it to them, you know, mm-hmm, talking TV stuff, Severance, the, yeah, the, you know, on the Apple TV thing there as well, yeah, where you're like, oh, one person's got two people in the head, but they're like location based and they go backwards, you know, between them both ways. But just in science fiction now, in our modern world of science fiction, this is like a huge trope, mm-hmm, of science fiction, is having multiple people in your head.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of Nine Fox Gambit.
Yeah.
All right, so you've got a guy and it's a young major or whatever she is in an army, and then like, we're going to put the brain, we're going to put the mind of this other person into your head and go. And yeah, in so many of these other, you know, books, which, you know, the Tor Wave Squeak Corps, it's like a trope. It's like, yeah, so much of a trope. The whole of that, you know, the Wizards versus Lesbians podcast. It's like they're reviewing these books, and because they're picking out and identifying these things, and because I've listened to the episodes where they're talking about a book that I've also listened to, and yeah, I'm like, yeah, of course, a memory called Empire, there's a whole society, mm-hmm, built of like, oh, the person who did your job before you, like, mm-hmm, the ambassador, yeah, we're going to take the ambassador's memory and put them in your head, so you then have this
the knowledge,
other,
yeah,
you also have this character, so yeah, it's just taken for granted now in our current science fiction world of like the, you know, late, you know, of like the last, like, say 10 years,
mm-hmm,
it's just a standard part of science fiction, multiple people in the head. So it can't be a twist,
yeah,
because if you get to the end of one of these books and it's sort of like, and the reason you were acting strange all this time is because, well, have you read Nine Fox Gambit and A Memory Kyle Empire and, you know, yeah, and Gideon the Ninth and all these other books where either at the start or at the end or by the second book, multiple people are existing within one brain or within one body.
Yeah.
That's it. And you're like, oh, but that's like the foundation of all of these other books rather than the twist or the reveal or like a weird plot development halfway through or whatever. So,
yeah.
And in all of these books, then there has to be something more done with it. Like, there has to be a greater reason for,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it has to continue from there. It can't be the sole,
yeah,
twist. It's not a twist, really.
Well, even if it's not a twist, if it's just a bit of world building, yeah, what are we going to deal with this thematically?
Yeah.
Like, what are the themes that are going to come out of this?
Yes.
So in terms of, you know, A Memory Called Empire, like, you could say that the title of the book is saying that there's a physical empire, but also you could say, again, this is just one of the reasons that one of this small colony where our main character comes from, who's not from the empire, the minds of the people of the humans of the past colonize their children's brains.
Yeah.
And I thought that was horrific. And other people, like, I'm not meaning other people, but like the way that it's written in the book is that the character from that place is like, yeah, this is great. And it's only by the second book that she's like, no, this isn't quite great. This, yeah, is awful. This is, yeah, like, this is like massive.
Yeah, you need to reflect on that and have like a retrospective coming to terms, and
yes,
then, like, then the philosophical questions and the ethical, yeah, questions are being asked.
Yeah.
However, we wanted to spoil this book and not six other books.
I'm saying I'm not spoiling those other books because those other books have this, like,
they start off like
yeah, chapter one, I get this person's brain implanted, or this, yeah, person's memories implanted in mine. I, yeah, get their brain implanted in mine. Hmm. That's foundational to them. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And also, and like I say, so it could be colonizing other people's brains.
Yeah.
In the Nine Fox Gambit series, it's very much an allegory for trans identity, mm-hmm, because there's so often of these, it's sort of like there's a male and a female personality within one.
Yeah.
And the character is like this conflict between male and female.
Mm-hmm.
And Yoon Ha Lee is a trans author, and especially by the second and third books in that series, which I don't think of as good as terms of books, but a kind of like a better exploration of like, oh, what if two people in one person's head, and what does that actually mean in terms of like trans issues or thoughts about trans, the mindset of
also
that.
Also of understanding how it feels for people who don't experience it.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It's a parable or an analog of the trans experience of having a body and looking down and going, wait, my hands are wrong. Like, these are male hands and they should be female hands, or these are female hands and they should be male hands. Like, whichever way round it goes, there's fun playing. In this book, in Chasm City, none of that. It's sort of like, here's a plot twist. Ha-ha, they're all psychopaths. And you're like, well, no wonder they're psychopaths if that's what's going on in their brains. But there's that is the theme. Like, the themes are outside of that. That's kind of like a twist, and it plays into it, but it can't be as explicit with the themes, or can't be as, like, it can't be quite as playful because it's, like, hidden until, like, you're suspecting halfway through the book that, wait a second, you know, as you go through, more and more comes out. So it's, like, it's less playful with the themes of having multiple people, because it has to consider the plot mechanics a bit more than these others, which are like, assume multiple people in one person's head and let's go.
Yeah, it's a bit like, you know, how we just watched these videos about the arithmetics, how it was how the ideas came across to England, and how they literally had to come up with and explain to people how things were written, how it was different.
Yeah, here's a column and there's zero. Depending on where the zero is, it means a different thing.
And then, so at the beginning of something, you can just state an obvious, or like, if it is the first, you're kind of having it easy. I mean, you are the first coming up with it. So then you can observe the basic stuff. Yeah. And everything that comes beyond that, people have to really ask crazy complicated theory questions. Yeah. And it can't start at the basis unless you then take that and take it into a completely different direction.
Well, let's think.
Which is very hard to do.
At the start of all, you know, like, oh, let's say time travel, there's someone writes a story called The Time Machine, H.G. Wells. Mm-hmm. It kind of explains, like, okay, here's the kind of thing that can happen with the time machine. And now nobody else can just write a story, or you have to do something different than, here's a person, they get into a time machine, they go towards the future and keep going towards the future and keep going. And what do they see there? Stuff in the future is different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now you have to, like, oh, you got to go back and accidentally, you know, your mother kisses you, or, you know, whatever the
weird things happening.
Yeah, you have to have like other adventures, you know, and you know, like, there can be like new foundational things, sort of like Back to the Future does the thing. Oh, if you change something in the past, people fade out of photographs, and everything since then in popular culture, or in movies at least, if you do any time travel, you're kind of like, oh no, you can't change something about the past. I mean, there's others, but that was such a popular movie.
The grandfather paradox is then a thing.
It's a thing you kind of assume it. And if you don't assume it, you literally have to have a line in your movie, which is, don't worry about all of that, we're just having a time adventure. Yes. Or in the movie Looper, where they sit down and I think, I can't remember, what the character meets himself and is like, don't you dare get out a picture, like get out a pen and paper and start drawing lines around. We're not doing that. And like, that's kind of like the director or writer of the movie going, no, we're not doing that. This is a different kind of adventure.
So all of this, like the theme of that in Chasm City is very well embedded into story, character development, things that are happening, weird things that are happening, the body horror, the explanation, like alien stuff.
Yeah, we haven't even got into all of that.
We haven't even got into all the individual gribbly things, but it is so well written that, like, you do read the really weird stuff when they go into that fifth spaceship thing. And then
I was wanting to not spoil it, even for because I know people would have listened to the spoiler section not having read the book, so there's still, even though we spoiled one of the main things, there's still loads of other stuff in here that we've not talked about, but anyway, carry on.
Anyway,
the gribbly
the stuff they go in there, and then I am sympathetic towards the gribbly, weird, slimy alien things, more so.
Yeah. This is a book where the humans are the horror. This is a book where the humans are the horrific.
Absolutely.
And you totally understand why there's a whole force out there which is trying to destroy, or is the idea is to destroy future humans, like, and future intelligence is spreading out through this is like the cautionary tale. It's like the wolves or the inhibitors or whatever they are called in this book.
Yeah.
They're like, ah, do you know about Sky Houseman? This is the reason why we've got to wipe out the entire human race. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah.
If this maybe that's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. I think humanity should be doomed because of this guy.
Yeah. So that's from much later then. However, there's like the only thing that I think, I mean, I'm not criticizing it for this book, but I think there's still possible material for Alistair Reynolds to actually write how the melding plague actually, like,
not find it interesting
he might not, but I don't know, there's so much stuff that like I want it, because we skip that as well, we skip it again.
Well, the opening note is, hey, you're turning up here, uh-oh.
Yeah, but it's I thought I would actually, like, I got the story told of how it came
about
from after.
Right. And you want to experience it firsthand.
Yeah, I want to see what, like, this is.
All right, let's write to Alistair Reynolds. I'll email Alistair Reynolds and say, hey, can you write a short story?
Please give us the story.
Just write a short story.
Of the experience. Somebody going through it.
One person and maybe a palanquin. They're around, like, tell us the story.
No, but they are only around because of
that. Yes, I was saying, tell us the story of the first palanquin.
Okay.
Is what I'm trying to say. Like, please tell us that.
Yeah.
All right, so, what I was trying to say, bringing up these previous examples, or like, not foundational, but examples which are early enough that the thing could just be the thing.
Yeah.
If it is just the thing.
Yeah.
That it's never strong enough, because the books that I read where there's like, oh, this is the first, this might feel derivative, but this is actually the first time that there was a, I don't know, rotating habitat in space. And you're like, oh, but this was just about rotating, nothing actually happened. It was just like an exploration of a rotating habitat in space. It's like, yeah, but this was the first one. And you're like, but there's nothing else here. Mm-hmm. And I've read quite a few of the books where there is just the thing.
The groundbreaking idea.
Like, the groundbreaking idea. But once that's explained to you, there's nothing else there.
Yes.
But what actually makes, like, War of the Worlds and the Time Machine, like, even though, oh, it's just an alien invasion, it's like, no, but it's still good, because there's other things there. It's grappling with other themes. There's other ideas. The characters are good. The story is good. The writing is good. Yeah. Same with these things. And in this case, I think this really does hold up, not just because, this idea has been done loads of times.
Yeah.
It's been done loads of times, and this is, like, early enough to Fight Club that it felt fresh at the time.
Yeah.
But even now, it's still a really good book, because there's so much else going on. It isn't just, hey, this one main twist, or this one main reveal, or this one main idea.
Like, there's so much going on, and so many, also so many interesting interactions. Like, sometimes you have books where every interaction just feels like, okay, I get it. Come on, get on with it. Let stuff happening. And here, it's the interactions between the people where I'm thinking like, oh yeah, give me more of that.
Yeah. All of that said, let's talk about the epilogue. You wanted to mention about the epilogue. I also have one or two things to say about the epilogue.
Yeah.
The very end of the book. Yeah. Afterwards.
Yeah. There was the epilogue.
Yeah.
And now, of course, now my mind is blank, but the last sentence was then a bit like, really?
I don't remember what the last sentence was.
Anyway, it felt really flat at the end. And also, I...
give me a book.
I thought there would be a bit more explanation, or what's then going on or happening or anything. And it is just an epilogue. Do you need my help?
Yeah, because I didn't realize how. No, I just don't need to look it up. I'll just say my things about the epilogue. You're saying it was a bit weak, a bit disappointing at the end.
Yeah,
I think the epilogue is, you couldn't get away with that. No, it's not that you couldn't get away with it now. It feels like a book which is kind of fun for its time. That at the end of the book, our main character. Yeah, but I don't really have much to say. I just want to, while you were talking, see if I could look at the last line.
Yeah.
I just know one thing, which is life's what you make it. Yes. Okay. So, right. Yeah, I get like, it. It's a little it's like bit of a joke like sign
a little,
off.
A little bit like a, one of those. We've watched some of the compilations of footballers celebrating a goal, yeah. going on their knees, doing the slide, and then the slide failing.
Like, oh, no. It's not a face plant. But what I find funny about this, the end of this book, is that we've had all this time. We've worked out that all three of the main characters who we've talked about here, or like all the three of, like this guy has actually got three people in his head. And he,
no, he's not. He doesn't have three people in his head.
What?
He is three people.
Yes, he is three people.
He was three different people.
He was three different people.
And now he, at the end, he needs to grapple who he actually
he's
is.
He's not actually three people. He's had three identities.
Yes.
But
okay,
the first two identities are before his break, his amnesia break.
Yeah.
Which I think was an intentional amnesia break because whatever the guy was back on the planet, Sky's Edge.
Cahuelia.
He did that on purpose, but Cahuelia is also Sky Houseman. Yeah. So those two people are the same. But I would say there's these three different personalities that we meet through the book, which all turn out to be him in his head. Mm. And he's sort of like, it turns out I'm not that person anymore. I'm going to have to be a new person. Mm. And it's quite funny that the new person is sort of like just becomes like a game master, like a TV producer. And I was just like, oh, that's really weird. Yeah. That there's like this weird bit of like game design, but you know, the most dangerous game, which is human hunting. And they're like, oh yeah, let's make it voluntary human hunting so the people sign up for it. And you're like, nobody would do that.
And it's then
like,
let's make money from it.
Yeah. And sort of like, oh yeah. And we became really fabulously rich and powerful people within the city because we came. And I was like, oh, that's really weird that this guy who's been a psychopath all the way through, that was the one part of the book which kind of felt a bit dated, that like at the end that was like the most Fight Club ending of the book, whereas at the end of Fight Club they're like, they blow everything up and they're like, oh, but I still get the girl and survive or whatever, whereas I think the original book, which I've not read, of Fight Club is he ends up in a mental hospital, like he fails and ends up in a mental hospital. And I was kind of like, even though this is the third time I've read the book, I like the epilogue kind of caught me by surprise. I was like, oh, I must have blanked that out of my head. I must have had voluntary amnesia for that. Not that it's bad, it's just that these days you'd be like, no, that person's too dangerous. They wouldn't like even as like the author should make sure that they're like, well, that person can't just be out and about and living in the world.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, this is a dystopia and it's totally fine for the psychopath to get a happy ending. And I was like, I didn't want the psychopath to get right at the end. You're like, don't want the psychopath to have a happy ending.
And then the ethical question comes again, how much self-observance and self-bettering, now in scare quotes, can a person do to void all the shitty things they've done in the past?
Yeah.
Like, how much does it take? And does it ever happen?
Almost as though he wrote a whole book called Redemption Arc.
Yeah. Are they still
an absolution?
The same? Yeah. And it feels like it's very much observing the same same themes again at that point. But the epilogue felt a bit like I didn't know what ending I would have wished for.
But everything so far has been compressed. It's sort of like, we start and it's like, you know, 4 days later or 5 days later, everything that's happening in that main sequence in Chasm City is like really compressed. And then it felt like, oh, remember what we were doing before when we were doing these big time skips and just kind of explaining, oh, back on this place we did this, on the starship, it's now years later when we've grown up and done this. It felt like that was suddenly just fast forward. And I was like, did he just forget what happened? Like, is there more? Anyway, again, it's not a criticism. It just kind of caught me out.
It's 4.5 stars and not 5.
I wouldn't say that is the thing that let me down. I think the pacing in the middle is kind of where it might have lost a half star.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. I think we've done, how long have we done here? Yeah, like 53 minutes. Wrap up before an hour.
Sounds good. Yeah, but anyway, I mean, if you're still listening, I hope you have read the book.
Yeah.
If you're still listening and haven't read the book, still to go and do it.
It's still worth reading. Yeah. Again, if you don't mind a book which features psychopaths heavily and quite a lot of horror and body horror and internal mind horror. Again, I've got to keep saying that. And it's not as bad as I thought it would be. Like,
oh,
on
I
memory,
thought it was quite bad.
But Juliana thought it was worse than she thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. Head over to goodreads.com and I can see what you think of this book. Oh, my microphone stand did a bit squeaky stuff here. Because I turned it here. So I gave this 4 stars here on back in 2012.
Yeah.
Although it says 2016, but I think that's when I went back through and gave Goodreads reviews to all the books that I reviewed before I signed up for Goodreads that were there.
That happens.
Yeah, Mario, friends and following, 188 people have read or reviewed this book who are friends of mine. Mario the Lone Bookwolf says, get some illegal implants if you dare, 5 stars. Guillermo rated it 5 stars. How long would you have to live? How much good would you have to do to compensate for one act of pure evil you'd committed as a younger man? That's the quote that he starts off his review, 5-star review from. That's from 2012 as well. Mm-hmm. Which is just what you said.
Yeah.
David Sven rated it 5 stars. Tudor, 5 stars. Ziven, 5 stars. D, 5 stars. Tyler, 5 stars. We've got to get all the way down to Peter here. 4 stars. A story about revenge, identity, and if the mistakes in your past define you today. I can't say this. It's not one act that he did as a child. Yeah, It's not one act. No, it was a series of premeditated...
Multiple lifetimes. Like, you can't even understand how big these... That's not like calling it mistakes. That is kind of really downplaying it. No, it's like multiple lifetimes. And I'm talking not only... 2, but kind of 3.
Yeah. B rated it 4 stars. I tried reading Reynolds as a teen and hated it. It left me cold and miserable. Now in my 30s, I'm finding everything I've been looking for in space opera, finally.
That's good.
So, wonderful tech. Civilizations falling from grace given them by the tech when the melding plague hit them. 2022 reread. My review still stands. I have to admit the ending fell apart a little for me. It was a little too neatly parceled up, but in all, a great story. Kevin rated it 4 stars, and then I need to click more reviews because Goodreads never wants to just show you something. It always wants to ask you to click more.
Click on it.
4 stars from some Elliot, women. Soltoff, Rick, Richard, Peter,
any
Andrew,
women?
Stephen, Tom, Phil, and then we got to get down to Joel, who gave it 3 stars.
Did you hear what I'm saying? What's any that? Women? Any women saying anything about it?
Yeah, is B a woman? Yeah. Or is B just, has it got a cat avatar? So I don't know if B is male or female. B is male. I just couldn't tell by the name or the cat avatar.
Yes.
I'm sure some women have also read this book, but not who are turning up and giving it 5 stars. It is a very male book. And again, that's what I say. If this book was written now, you couldn't get away with just sort of like a macho military
assassin in the books.
What?
2 women.
I actually quite like the women in the book.
Yeah, Isabel, the women are really good.
Isabel rated it 3 stars. There we go. I'm guessing Isabel is... lots of people... Elaine, Paul, Peter, lots of people reading it, giving it 3 stars.
And I do understand, and I do see why people would do that, because some things are really off-putting and like can be really off-putting. But it always, the writing and the storytelling and the complexity and the just the imagination always gets me around.
Brian rated it 1 star.
Ooh.
But, you know. Again,
happens.
If you think the plotting is weak, like he says, the plotting doesn't make sense. Okay. I'm like, I'm totally fine with a book with crazy plotting, which doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Because this book makes no sense at all. Like the plot of Chasm City is so stupid. It's so dumb.
Yeah, but that's the whole point.
Yeah, but that's what you could say about any of these Jekyll and Hyde Fight Club kind of things.
Yeah.
It's all stupid. It doesn't make any sense. Because you're like, yeah, but this person must be really, really stupid. It's like, yeah, but you've just got to go with that.
Yeah.
When somebody doesn't know that they've got 2 people in their brain.
Yeah.
And just because somebody does know they've got 2 people...
You keep saying that he doesn't have 2 people in his brain.
I'm using the modern way of looking at it from all of these modern science fiction books, which now it's established that you can have 2 people in your brain. You can have 2 identities in one human head, brain, body, computer, augmentation stuff. So
he just remembers himself, literally himself. Okay. We said we're wrapping it up.
Oh, yeah.
What's the next book?
The next review that we're going to do is Service Model by Adrian Tchaikovsky, which I finished yesterday or 2 days ago. But we wanted to get... You just finished this book yesterday.
I wanted to get it out of my head.
So you want to get this book out of your head. So tomorrow we'll record another podcast about Adrian Tchaikovsky's Service Model.
Yeah.
And then the next book after that, I don't know, because I haven't started reading another book yet.
Ooh, you need to find a new one.
And please submit anything that you'd like us to talk about on episode 550, where we'll do a special episode. We do them every 50 episodes.
Yep.
And this time we're going to talk about the SFBRP Masterworks series, where we are going to make up a list of masterworks of books which we think are worth reading, either because we really like them, that they're really good, or that they're influential. However, they have to also stand up to modern reading.
Yeah.
So...
From our point of view.
From our point of view.
At this time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's cool. It from us. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.